speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
It's Tuesday, March 10th, 2020. I'm David Knight, your host. Today, we're going to have some more primaries in the Democrat Party. We have solutions that are coming out for the economic disruption of the coronavirus. And we also have the U.S. military, a couple of alarming articles. You probably saw them on the Drudge Report. We'll talk about them a little bit and the implications of it. U.S. Navy robot submarine would be able to kill without human control. What we're talking about here is autonomous killer robots. This is another new threat. We're dealing with, I think, the results of bioweapons. And if this is not a cultivated bioweapon that was released deliberately or accidentally, we need to be aware of that threat, and we need to address that threat. I'm very much concerned and amazed that we have the New York Times and Vox and others are basically pushing back and still offering nonsense like, hey, this is probably coming from pangolins. We don't have any evidence of this, but, you know, don't pay any attention to those bioweapons labs. Don't pay any attention to autonomous killer robots either. Don't pay any attention to the idea that the Pentagon is now awarding contracts to create mobile nuclear reactors. I thought we were about to go to war with Iran because we didn't want to have any nuclear reactors in the hands of our enemies. So you're going to take this small nuclear reactor and put it into a combat zone or put it into an area where you got a military base, you got that this could easily fall into the hands of hostile enemies who could make, at the very least, a dirty bomb out of this. What are these people thinking? But, you know, when you look at this mobile nuclear reactor plan, it's really no different in substance than these bioweapons labs that they have scattered all over the United States and other places as well, but especially in the United States. It's not just the biosafety level 4 labs, but it's also all of these research centers. They're in the universities that you don't even know about that. So we're going to talk about that. And in conjunction with the campaign today, we'll have some political news. But there's also some bigger issues as well. We have in Michigan, you have a large mosque that, as WND points out, a nonprofit Michigan mosque illegally campaigning for Bernie. They put out campaign literature urging everybody to vote for Bernie Sanders. Well, I think it's significant to know that he's being endorsed by this mosque. We were told for the longest time, remember we said, Obama is a Marxist and he has Muslim sympathies if he isn't a Muslim himself, which there were a lot of indications that he was. Raised in that area and attended a madrasa where his mother was there, went to school there, and then was reported by the New York Times to have kicked off his campaign. You know, giving a Muslim prayer, but, you know, no video of that. So it didn't happen. They buried all that stuff. But everybody told us they're totally opposite of each other. Well, no, they're not. But we also have to be careful that we don't jump into this. I remember when Joseph Farah was running WND, he was at the forefront of saying, look, you can't use this 501c3 law and the Johnson Amendment to shut down free speech. So that's not the issue. I mean, it's important to understand where these people are coming from, but I don't want to use the IRS to ban their speech. We don't want to use Twitter to censor people either. We don't want to see censorship. We want to win in the free marketplace of ideas, because if we go that direction, the other side of this argument is that we see the Democrats in the House of Representatives, as well as Canada, now presenting a bill banning conversion therapy. Yeah, you cannot tell people that they can change, not psychologically and not religiously. And if you ban conversion therapy, you're banning the gospel, that kind of free speech. So we've got to be careful. We really do want to have freedom of religion and free speech. But we'll talk about the chrononomics when we come back. What happened to the stock market? What's going to happen today? We'll see. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Deceit. telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
It's Tuesday, March 10th, year of our Lord, 2020. I'm David Knight, your host. We're going to take a look at a wide variety of issues today. We have the next round of Democrat primaries. Not as many states, of course, as Super Tuesday, but there are a lot of delegates up for grabs, and it's kind of unusual how they're being allocated. So we'll talk about today being a big opportunity, as many people pointed out, that Joe Biden could bury Bernie, or Bernie could have an unexpectedly a good result from this particular day. I don't know. I think it's going to be one where the DNC wins one for the gaffer, though. Not the Gipper. You know, that was Reagan. But we've got some gaffes as well that are playing into Twitter censorship. We're going to talk about, is it warranted for Twitter to ban the video showing the gaffe of Joe Biden that we talked about yesterday? And we're also going to talk about censorship and new speech rules are being imposed by the DNC, by Wikipedia, even by the Chinese government. And, of course, the Chinese government wants something. You've got the people at MSNBC jumping in and kowtowing to them as well. But before we get into that, let's take a quick look at the economic consequences of the coronavirus. Yesterday, we had a massive drop in the stock market as the show began. About a half hour after the show begins, the stock market opens up. It immediately shut down within just a few minutes, triggering a circuit breaker. And then they suspended trading for a while, renewed it, and it continued to drop down. They pulled it up. It had initially dropped down about 1,900 points. They stopped it because it was happening so quickly. And prior to the market opening, of course, they had already hit the stop circuit breakers that would stop futures trading because they didn't want to have panic trading. And when they did open it up, it kicked around about 1,400 to 1,600 points down instead of the 1,900 that it had fallen to before the circuit breakers. But by the end of the day, it was down 2,013 points, 7.8%. So it was actually went down even further than that initial plunge at the beginning of the day. That means that the market is now down 19% from its high, which is just a couple of weeks ago. Now, you know, officially a correction is when the market goes down 10% from its high. We are now nearly into the official definition of a stock market recession. And this is a roller coaster week. Last week they said the S&P 500 was up or down by more than 2.5% for 4 days straight. Very, very volatile market. A lot of uncertainty. And again, this circuit breaker kicked in for the first time since 1997, locking out the stock market for 15 minutes. Now, it's not just stocks, it's also oil. Oil has plunged 24% for the worst day since 1991. And that's nearly 30 years. And of course, as I pointed out yesterday, the Democrats in Virginia immediately wanted to jump on that and said, quick, raise the taxes before they notice that the price of oil has gone down. That's what these people always do. And then, of course, they'll come in and say, well, it's only a few cents per gallon. They don't talk about the massive increase. In some areas, it will be as much as 112% increase that they're going to go up on taxes. So, you know, there's the Democrats. They're looking out for those bread and butter issues, paying attention to the poor middle class, always on your side, aren't they? No, actually not. But there are bigger issues that are happening here with the oil. That is, I think, as perhaps more fundamental measure of where the economy is going than even the stock market. Because the stock market is very volatile, and we all, if you're of a certain age, you remember from experience what happened when OPEC sent a oil price shock through the economy. It created massive stagflation, had a stagnant economy and massive inflation. And so right now, what is developing is a price war. You had the OPEC price agreement. The different countries with OPEC and with Russia had agreed to limit production to try to get prices up. And a couple of years ago, you had the Saudis actually try to increase production to try to drive the U.S. shale oil producers out of business, then that didn't work out too well for them. And so they put together an alliance with Russia to keep production down so that prices would go up. But now that the alliance has fallen, inexplicably, you have the Saudis now decided that with demand and the economy globally plummeting because the coronavirus and other issues, demand is way down. And so they have now announced that since this deal has expired, they're going to really dump the market, glut the market with production. Think about that. I mean, where did the Saudi economic ministers go to school? Did they go to the same place as AOC? If you got plunging demand, you don't flood the market with product unless you want to go bankrupt. And they are trying to bankrupt the U.S. shale oil industry. They think that they can hold out longer than the shale oil industry. Peter Schiff weighed in on this in an interview. I want to play a little bit of that interview that he had, video clip number one.
The real problem in the U.S. economy is all the debt. You know, we have so much debt, not just in oil companies, but, you know, in all sorts of companies. And everybody is missing this. All of the analysts that are looking at the stock market can't see the bubble for the pin, because the problem is the debt bubble. It's not the pin that pricked it. If it wasn't the coronavirus, it would have been something else. So the air is now coming out of the biggest financial bubble the Fed has ever inflated. And the big difference between what's happening now in 2008 is this time they don't have enough bullets left in their gun to reflate a larger bubble. So now we're going to have to deal with the full aftermath of this coming crisis.
All right. As he pointed out, it's really the debt. The debt is the bubble. Everybody's looking at, you know, what happened to this coronavirus and what's going on with China? But this is something that has been hanging over everybody's head for quite some time, wondering what the pen was going to be to puncture it. And as I said, a lot of heavily indebted energy companies are clearly going to go bankrupt. And so ultimately, those that survive will be in a position to make even more money as the price of oil rebounds, which I do expect it to happen. The U.S. shale oil industry, he thinks, is likely to be hit the worst. He said, really, $50 to $60 a barrel is kind of a minimum for a lot of these guys to survive. We don't even have that before this happened. And now we're in the low 30s. So that's going to cause a lot of devastation. Max Keiser was saying the same thing. As a matter of fact, he takes it a little bit further and the consequences. But he was also talking about the debt bubble. He said, we're witnessing part two of the 2008 crisis with the credit bubble blowing up yet again. If you just give the same bad guys a bigger credit line to do the same bad things, we'll wind up with the same bad outcome. Except it's a bigger bad outcome. And he also believes the U.S. shale market is going to bear the brunt of the price war that's going on in oil. Saudi Arabia, he thinks, will fare no better. He believes that Russia probably has the best hand in the game. That's Max Keiser's analysis. He says, as opposed to U.S. shale oil, Russia has a much cheaper extraction price, and it doesn't have the massive debt to deal with like Saudi Arabia does. He predicts that this will be a complete evisceration of the American shale industry. It's going to need a massive bailout, massive money printing. And so he believes that that will, in turn, expedite the end of the petrodollar, weakening both the U.S. dollar and the Saudis at the same time. And so when you look at the Saudis, again, like I said, what are they thinking? State energy giant Saudi Aramco is now offering unprecedented discounts in Asia, Europe, and the U.S. to entice refiners to use their oil. Saudi has privately told some market participants they could raise production much higher if needed, going to a record 12 million barrels a day. They're going into a full price war. Unprecedented pricing move came just hours after the OPEC agreement with Russia broke down. So you had a price fix that breaks down. So now they're going to glut a declining market with product. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Nowhere to run to, baby. Nowhere to hide.
So is the coronavirus a bioweapon? Oh, it is. If you're talking about politics, it's definitely a bioweapon in terms of politics. We have President Trump. Here's a headline from the Washington Post. President Trump struggles to calm the nation after days of increasing pressure. Now, they say that this is a bad thing, right? You know, it's laudable if Obama and others try to tamp down panic. And we saw that happen with the swine flu and so forth. Biden's like, oh, no, I wouldn't get on a plane if I was you. It's kind of closed up. And then think, well, it's, oh, 2 hours later, I shouldn't have said that. No, we don't want to panic anybody. And yet the Washington Post says that President Trump has a conspiratorial mindset. His overall handling, he is spreading misinformation and blaming others. Don't blame China. It's not their fault, right? Not their fault at all. No, you must. I don't know what he's supposed to do. Is he supposed to panic people more than the press is doing? You know, when he comes out and offers solutions to what has already hit us, which is massive economic unrest, they push back against that as well. Trump offered payroll tax cuts. Well, you know what the Democrats are going to say to payroll tax. You know what they're going to say to any tax cuts, right? No tax cuts. As a matter of fact, they have an economic relief plan, but of course, it involves direct handouts from them, just so that you understand who your masters are, right? You know, on a plantation, you want to make sure that the slaves understand that they get their handouts directly from the master. You know, pork barrel projects. That's where that term came from. You know, the slaves would gather around the pork barrel and get handouts. And so you don't want people to be able to keep some of their own labor and think that that's theirs, right? No, no, no. You want it to come be seen coming from the government. So President Trump talks about payroll tax cuts, help for hourly workers. And they say he's only concerned about the stock market. He only looks for these big investors. President Trump said very substantial relief. That's a big number. We're also going to be talking about hourly wage earners getting help so they can be in a position. So they're not ever going to miss a paycheck. We're going to take care of and have been taking care of the American public and the American economy. And Democrat leaders, however, made it clear they were not on board with that program. They don't support a tax cut. And they claim that President Trump is more concerned about the stock market because, you know, he wants to do a tax cut, right? That's obvious. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said, well, they haven't checked with us. I haven't been called. See, he must grovel to Chuck Schumer first. Well, you know, Chuck, you are the minority leader. Minority leader. There's a reason they call you minority leader. There's a reason you don't get direct calls, besides the fact of what you have shown yourself to be nothing other than a partisan shill who's not interested about doing anything for the American economy as long as you can create a crisis that you can use for your own political good. Steny Hoyer on the House side. Usually one of the more mainstream Democrats, not as radical as Pelosi. But he comes out and says, I don't think a payroll tax is what we need right now. The president's answered almost everything as a tax cut. Well, economically it is. Get out of our pockets. That is the... Everybody knows that a tax cut is going to stimulate the economy. As we said right after the election. Immediately after President Trump was elected. They knew that he was going to do a tax cut. What happened? Well, you had companies start to expand already, knowing that a tax cut was going to be coming. And it took them quite a while. It took them more than a year to do that. But because of just the expectation of a tax cut, the economy expanded. And then when the tax cut happened, the expansion got even bigger. Democrats like Patty Murray of Washington have called for legislative remedies, including emergency paid sick leave. So we'll pay you to stay home, but we're not going to let you keep more of your money if you work. So we're going to incentivize people not going to work. Pence didn't rule out such a proposal, say nobody should feel like they have to go to work if they're ill. They shouldn't fear losing their job or a paycheck, staying home as a result of the epidemic. But, you know, why don't we try to reward people that are actually producing and working? That's a novel idea that's never been embraced by the Democrats. Reason Magazine takes on the whole idea as to whether or not stimulus spending would be a good idea because we have an economic advisor, former economic advisor to Obama, His name is Jason Furman. And what he wants is essentially a $350 billion bill so that we can hand out $1,000 checks to every adult. Every adult. Again, universal basic emergency health fund or something. Right? Again, always a handout, never a tax cut. And as Reason Magazine points out, well, there's a couple of reasons that an economic stimulus would not be a wise response to this, because they've already got massive deficits running well over $1 trillion a year, escalating. The first thing is we don't know exactly how severe this is going to be. We've got a very volatile stock market. Part of that volatility is because of, wait for it, the debt. Not just corporate debt, but government debt. And then there's also the amount of time that it takes for an economic stimulus to have effect. Even Furman conceded, the Obama economic advisor conceded, that studies show that it takes as much as a full year for monetary policy stimulus, for example, lowering interest rates, to really have a measurable effect on the economy. So it's something that if it has an effect, we don't know what the effect is going to be of the coronavirus. If it's going to, as the weather warms up, that's the good part. We do have climate change is on the way. It's called spring. And in spring, flu typically gets better. And when we look at this, is this simply just the flu? The flu has killed 20,000 Americans, including 136 children so far this season, says the CDC. President Trump says that the COVID-19 death rates will be a fraction of 1%. Is that correct? A big part of this, I think, that is happening is it is very dependent on overwhelming the healthcare system. I think that's why things have gotten so bad in Italy, as I pointed out yesterday. In Italy, they have already nationalized healthcare. And I pointed out in the late 1970s, my wife's cousin's grandmother broke her leg, and because of the long waiting times, she was elderly. They couldn't see her for quite a while. She developed gangrene, and it cost her her life. She died from a broken leg because of the waiting periods of an overwhelmed national health care system. And the Italian health care system is always overwhelmed. And what happens is when you have a new flu that comes in, everybody starts getting sick all at once. That's why they have so rapidly, both there and in China, tried to isolate people, go into quarantine to make sure that they spread out the number of cases, that it doesn't hit as a massive impulse where everybody gets sick all at once. They spread out that so that they can deal with that with the health system and try not to overwhelm it. That's really what we're seeing here. Eventually, this is going to go away as people start to develop immunity to it. The real key is that you have to not overwhelm the healthcare system. We're going to be right back. We'll talk more about this, and then we'll talk about the bioweapon aspect of it, the vaccines, and the phony test kits that are being put out by Bill Gates. What is the risk of that? We'll be right back.
Liberty, it's your move. This is The David Knight Show.
All right, welcome back. Let's talk about the Gates test kit. I mentioned that yesterday. I said, okay, so you're just going to swab your nose with that, and he's going to tell you magically if you got the coronavirus. And then kind of ominously, he had this to say, one of the most important things from our perspective, this is a spokesperson for the Gates Foundation, having watched and worked on this in other parts of the world, is the identification of people who are positive for the virus so they can be safely isolated and cared for, and the identification of their contacts, who can then be quarantined. And so I said, all right, so we've got this test, and it's got kind of a spotty record so far, the one from the CDC. They put it out beginning of February, and then they pulled it back, and they think, it doesn't work. They pulled it back and then left it off the market for quite some time. Now they're saying, we're going to have millions of these things out there. Bill Gates is saying the same thing. They're going to start distributing soon a testing kit that you can do at home. And they've allocated $20 million for this, at least $5 million of it, in the Seattle area, which is where Microsoft was. And they say that after they start doing these tests, cases could soar to 12,000 to 30,000 by the end of the month. I think that's one of the reasons why there wasn't a lot of development, a lot of testing being done here in America. They didn't want to alarm people. But what the other side of this is that if you don't identify people who have it or who have had it or who have mild cases of it, then what happens is the deaths that you have, or you know, the cases that you've identified, are really only the cases that are very, very serious, and it makes it look a lot more dangerous than it is, perhaps. That's another way that these this data can be distorted. So they're going to start testing hundreds per day and scaling that up in the weeks ahead. So, you know, when you look at this, the question I have is, let's assume that this test is valid for a moment. I'll tell you why in just a moment it's not valid. But let's assume that it's valid. If you've got a lot of people who have had it, or they had a mild case of it, and we were talking about this with a crew yesterday. You know, I had, after my wife and I took our cruise in December, 5 days after the cruise, my wife got very sick with the flu. A couple of days after that, I got it. It's the sickest I've ever been with a flu. I don't know if that was the case. I mean, we're on a cruise ship. There's a lot of people from a lot of different areas there on that cruise ship. But as we were traveling back, we had an extended layover in one area because of problems with the plane. And as I was trying to get food, my wife found a good seat just talking to a guy who had been in China for a very long time and had just gotten back. Talked to him for an extended period of time. She was the first one to get sick 5 days later. I don't know if we had it or not. Some people could have had a very mild case of it. If you've had it and you've recovered and you're tested and you're flagged, are you going to get then hauled off into quarantine, into a FEMA camp? I mean, that's one of my concerns. The other concern that I have is, what is Bill Gates going to do with that data? I would never give any of my data to Bill Gates without it being essentially taken by stealth or deception, which is basically what is happening on the internet all the time. They're always grabbing information about you, which is why I wouldn't give them my DNA. I'm not sharing information about myself on Facebook. I tell my kids not to do that because they'll scrape that information off of it. Well, I'm not going to scrape my DNA off and give that to them as well. So let's go back and take a look at the initial problems that they had with their testing kit, because that might give us some insight as to whether or not Bill Gates' testing kit is going to work. Going back to the end of February, after missteps, says NBC, the CDC says its coronavirus test kit is now ready for prime time. For more than a month, officials throughout the country have been asking for the CDC to enable more widespread testing for the never-before-seen infection as coronavirus cases around the globe rose past 82,000. Now they're 110, something like that. And so a lot of people look at this and say, look at that, CDC doesn't have these testing kits ready. That's Trump's fault. The CDC is Trump. Well, you know, like most of the Washington bureaucracy, it is entrenched. And if you fire anybody, then that's grounds for impeachment, essentially. So the CDC that's there is pretty much the permanent immortal bureaucracy that goes with every presidency. But nevertheless, let's take a look at the kit here. At the beginning of February, you had John Rappaport saying the CDC has announced that they're pulling back these test kits because they don't work. Here's why they don't work, reported John Rappaport. He said they can't work. He said, why? Because as the CDC mentions on its website, the test is a version of the PCR. Technicians take a small specimen from a patient that might contain a virus. If it does, the virus particles or particle would be much too small to observe or analyze. The test then amplifies the specimen many times, as you would if you blew up a photograph, until a virus, if present, can be observed and supposedly identified. But the flaw, and it is a fatal flaw, is that the test says nothing reliable about how much virus is in the patient's body. Why is this important? Because millions and millions of virus actively replicating in the body are necessary to begin talking about the virus causing a disease. You know, we were just told yesterday, don't touch the money. You know, you handle currency. We should get rid of all cash. All, you know, go completely cashless because paper money picks up germs. There's something like 300,000 bacteria on a piece of paper money. But you're not necessarily have those bacteria in sufficient quantity to make you sick, right? Patients who only have a non-important tiny amount of what might be a coronavirus are going to be labeled with the epidemic disease. They'll be quarantined and hospitalized and scared and treated with toxic antiviral medicines. That's why you don't want to send your, so one or another reason you don't want to send it to Bill Gates. But then there's this. When you look at the CDC test, and so I thought, well, you know, what? Is there anything else about this that would make it not work for a home kit? You know, the problem is when the CDC does it with a PCR test, they have no idea if they find it, a single particle of it, they have no idea how much of it you have. Is it going to make you sick or not? But then there's another problem when you look at the CDC's site itself. When they talk about how to grab it, they say, well, you can use specimens, including swabbing nose and so forth. So, okay, that's fine. That's what Gates is talking about. But then you have to handle the specimens in a certain way, which presents a problem for the home testing regime of Bill Gates. Specimens can be stored at 39 degrees Fahrenheit for up to 72 hours after collection. That's refrigerated. If a delay is expected, you have to freeze them. You have to take them down to minus 94 degrees Fahrenheit. And it says specimens that are not kept at 39 degrees Fahrenheit for less than 4 days or frozen at minus 94 degrees Fahrenheit are not usable. And so as a result, the equipment that you need to have in order to conduct these tests is you've got to have frost-free refrigerators, freezers, and you have to have a real-time detection system. I don't know how he's going to do this by mail. Even doing it in the air, if you don't go to the lab, I don't know. I mean, that maybe that's not an issue. I'm not a medical technician. But at the very least, the idea of just the mere presence of it, you could say that all of the currency has a, you know, has this on it. So it's, maybe you're not sick. Maybe it's not enough to get you sick, but it's there. So let's quarantine it. Let's destroy it. Let's go cashless. And let's throw you into the FEMA camp and give you toxic, untested drugs. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Whatever happens, the mainstream media wants you to be very alarmed about the coronavirus. They want you to be angry with President Trump. They want you to panic and grab all the toilet paper you can and hoard it. But don't be concerned about the bioweapons labs that have proliferated throughout this country and into other countries now, into Wuhan. New York Times, for example, the end of last week, came out with the pangolin myth again. Coronavirus is the revenge of the pangolins. Genetic analysis have come up short of pinpointing the culprit so far, but among the prime suspects is a pangolin, they said. And so they write this whole article about pangolins and how they're getting their revenge on, you know, kind of like Mother Nature. When we have a storm, you know, during hurricane season, we have hurricanes, according to Hollywood and all the left. It's Mother Nature. It's Gaia getting even with us, right? Well, these are the pangolins getting even with us because they're a very rare species, and they've been hunted nearly to extinction. Not that they existed in a large range anyway in the first place. You know, if you want to have more of an animal, then you raise them for commercial purposes like cows. We don't have cows that are going out of existence, right? Because we use them as a meat source. But as they pointed out, why do they think then that pangolins are maybe the source of this? Because they said, well, we don't have any genetic information that indicates this, but let's talk about the endangered species aspect of this and then connect that into the coronavirus. And they say, if anything, the meat of the pangolins was believed to cause ailments. And so they go back to some ancient Chinese writings. They say, there's lurking ailments in our stomach. Don't eat the meat of the pangolins because it may trigger them and harm us. Another one warned that people who eat pangolin may contract chronic diarrhea, then go into convulsion, get a fever. If you eat rat, it raises your blood pressure, gives you diseases, right? So maybe you don't want to eat rats either, but they do, nevertheless, in China. So the bottom line with this, they never offer any evidence for this, the New York Times. But again, what they're doing is they're diverting your attention away from a very, very real concern about bioweapons, about gain-of-function experiments. They did pangolins transmit the coronavirus to humans? Is COVID-19 their revenge on us for bringing them to the edge of extinction? In any event, yet another ban on trading and eating pangolins isn't likely to help them, especially with its caveats for medical use and so forth. So they dance around the subject after putting that out there as a headline. Total nonsense. Vox is just about as bad, maybe worse. Their story that came out last week, the conspiracy theories about the origins of the coronavirus debunked. Workers, they show in the picture, they're workers inside the Wuhan Institute of Virology in Wuhan, China. And many people, I'd say conspiracy theorists, have conjectured that the lab is the origin of the COVID-19 coronavirus outbreak. You've got Fox News and social media pushing a dangerous conspiracy theory about the origin of the health crisis, and it just won't die. And then Vox explains to us that, yes, the Wuhan Institute of Virology is a real place, boys and girls. It really is. The exact origin, however, of the novel coronavirus is still a mystery, but they can rule it out that it has any connection at all to it, even though it's at ground zero of the outbreak. It's just convenient. No connection at all. This is not a conspiracy theory. It's the way you do an investigation. You take a look, if you have a murder, what do? Who was there? Who had motive? Who had the means? And so forth. You start to ask questions. And so the first thing they do is like, well, this obviously didn't come from the Wuhan bioweapon lab, because look at who is spreading the rumor. And they say, this started with Rush Limbaugh. No, it didn't. We were talking about this a long time before that. As a matter of fact, they were talking about it a long time before that. Go back to 2017 as this began. I said, look at the articles from 2017 where people are very concerned about the research that's being done there. As they opened up that lab, they said, look, it's going to be working on coronavirus variants. They're going to have SARS and MERS and Ebola. This is very dangerous. These people have never done this before. Besides, they stole the documents. They don't read English too well. There's a lot of things that can go wrong here. And then, of course, we had the indictment a couple of weeks later of the guy who was head of the chemistry department at Harvard, who had been paid massive amounts of money by the Chinese to help set up that lab between 2012 and 2017 when it opened up. And, he's given almost as much money per month as Biden's son. And then you had the espionage coming out of Canada's only biosafety level 4 lab. Again, Chinese stealing stuff and sending it back to China. But, they're saying, well, Rush Limbaugh says probably a Chi-Com lab experiment. They had Senator Tom Cotton. They said Steve Bannon went on Fox News. So these are the sources. So Fox, his audience, looks at this and says, oh, we hate those guys. They don't ever tell the truth about it. So, no, nothing to look for, right? And then they go on with this killer analysis. The unusual biochemical features of the virus could have only come about two ways. After the virus jumped from animal to human. How do you know that it jumped from animal to human? Were you there? Did you observe this? What lets you know that it jumped from animal? That's an assumption they made. What is called zoonotic transfer? Number one, natural selection in a non-human animal host prior to zoonotic transfer, or two, natural selection in humans following a zoonotic transfer. That's why they're going out sending, giving you all these myths about snakes and pangolins and so forth. and bats. In other words, nature came up with these weird characteristics in the genome. Quote, humans could never have dreamed this up, as they quote a leftist on his podcast. Humans could never have dreamed this up. So then that brings us back to this other story that I've also talked about weeks ago. 2015, from The Scientist. Lab-made coronavirus triggers debate. The creation of a chimeric SARS-like virus has scientists discussing the risks of gain-of-function research. We had Ralph Baric, infectious disease researcher at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, published a study on his team's efforts to engineer a virus. Let me tell you something. DNA did not evolve. DNA is a design code. It's so complicated, they had to take their best computers and scientists decades to try to unravel a portion of it. And these guys are messing with it. And they were roundly condemned in the scientific community for doing it. They said, well, the only way this could happen would be some kind of zoonotic evolution, and then that goes to humans and has more zoonotic evolution. It was engineered in a lab, and people talked about it in 2015. But now we got Vox and we got New York Times, those trusted media sources, lying to you about it. Why? Because they don't want you looking at the real problem, that if this isn't the problem this time, it's going to be a problem. I said this was found in horseshoe bats in China. They used horseshoe bats. They used the backbone of a virus that causes human-like severe acute respiratory syndrome, SARS, in mice. The hybrid virus could infect human airway cells and cause disease in mice, according to the team's results that they published in Nature Medicine. They demonstrate the ability of this surface protein. This is what the binding of the surface protein to bind and infect human cells. And they said it's capable of making the leap to people without first evolving in an intermediate host. And so the people are saying, why in the world are you doing this? And I say to the mainstream media, why in the world are you covering this up? And when we come back, we're going to talk about some other various, very dangerous things that are being done by our government and by the military that need to be talked about as well, but are also being swept under the carpet by the media for the most part. Folks, you need to start to practice. You know, we have these new terms that are coming out, you know, about how you greet each other. You know, we have social distancing. We have elbow rubbing and foot tapping and waving and all this other kind of stuff. Now, you really do need to isolate yourself. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the risk factors that people start to identify. Over 60, high blood pressure, coronary disease are the three things that they mentioned in articles yesterday. All of these things make you at higher risk. And so you've had government officials saying, if you check those boxes, make sure that you have put aside sufficient storage of food so you don't have to go out and forage for it at the supermarket. Not at the pangolin market, but just, you know, going down and picking up your toilet paper and things like that. So you want to make sure that you have prepared. Make sure that you are not going to get swept up into a FEMA camp where you're going to then basically be in an incubator, not in quarantine. We have still a supply of InfoWars storable food. We've not gone up on the price. It is now about 7 or 8 weeks out. If you want to place your order, we've had our supplier up their production. Also, make sure that you have access to clean water. You can get a gravity feed water filtration system. And make sure that you have the vitamins and minerals that are going to make your body as strong as possible. InfoWarsStore.com.
Keep on lying. Using free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
So as we have the New York Times and Vox and other mainstream media do everything they can to hide the risk of bioweapons labs, and again, I've talked about this for years, pretty much as long as I've been here. I've talked about how the CDC has, and there were a whole series of investigations that were done by USA Today. Allison Young was a reporter who was focused on that. Yeah, you know, you remember when they shipped live anthrax around? Do you remember when they had a very deadly bacteria escaped their biosafety level 3 lab in Tulane and got out of the lab and was found out in the fields with the primate, the U.S., the national primate center. The monkeys had it. They're running around out in the fields. This is something that is endemic in the soil. If you're not treated, it is has a very, very high fatality rate, much higher than anybody has claimed for COVID-19. You had one of the researchers from the CDC lab get sick as they were investigating it. But they said, that must have been a prior exposure. It just manifested now. You know, she's been investigating this for years, but it just manifested now. Now, they have a big issue in terms of their safety. And the question is, should we even be doing this? Should we be going out and collecting deadly diseases, making them easier to transmit and making them more deadly? That's basically what they were doing at University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. By combining the bat, what they were doing was they were adding it the capability for it to go dormant for a while so that you wouldn't see it. It helps to make it spread more easily. Is this something we should be doing? The CDC calls it their select agent program, where they do a gain of research. It's a military weapon. And these are the same people who are doing the autonomous killer robots at the same time. New, a brand new thing. And we got a gap. You know, we got a bioweapons gap, perhaps. Do we really? No, we pretty much got all the Nazi scientists and the Japanese war criminals. We brought them over here, part of Operation Paperclip. So we pretty much had a monopoly on it. And we've been escalating this. But now it's that technology is being transferred to China and other places. Is there a killer robot gap? Well, we're going to make sure that doesn't happen either. We're going to be at the forefront of this. And we got a lot of companies that are lining up with big contracts to take this on. So they don't want you to look at the bioweapons labs or the biowarfare programs. And they, at the same time, are coming after vaccine opponents. They don't want you to see anything from the inserts. They don't want you to hear people who have been injured by vaccines. They don't want your informed consent either. When you look at Connecticut, for example, we just had last week Senate leaders, the end of the week, Friday, we had state Senate leaders starting to demonize people there in Connecticut who were pushing back against the Democrats' mandated vaccine programs. And so you had the state Senate majority leader, Bob Duff, charged that the groups that are there to oppose it, they're getting dark money. Who are these people who are funding it? Is it Soros? No. Not Soros. As a matter of fact, listen to how absurd this is. You had not only the Senate majority leader, but you also had the Senate president pro tem come in and say, these groups are organized and they're showing up with thousands of mothers with their kids protesting us, and they haven't told us who's giving them money. So they're obviously being funded by dark money. Very sinister what's going on here. We got to shut this down. And so he said the groups are engaged in organized fundraising, and they seem to have spent more than $3,000. Big pharmaceutical companies light their cigars with $100 bills rolled up into a $3,000 wad. Are you kidding me? You're going to accuse this grassroots? If there's anything that's grassroots in this country, it is the anti-vaccine movement. And now these Democrats, it's the worst thing I can think of to call them, in Connecticut, are accusing this of dark money, some kind of a sinister scheme, a conspiracy theory.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
All right, before we move on to politics, and really this is a lot of politics. This is how an industry comes in, buys politicians, both Democrat and Republican, to make sure that their industry is protected, that their profits are protected. And now the model is, you know, in the past, what they would do is they would go in and they would buy the regulatory agencies, we would call that regulatory capture. And they would make sure that there were barriers put in, barriers to competition put in for people that are going to be new into the industry. A very simple way that happens is at the local level, established restaurants would go in and say, you know, you need to ramp up the regulations for new restaurants. You grandfather us in. But, you know, for any new restaurants coming in, we've got to have all new kitchen plans. They can't buy anything used. Can't use anything used. Got to be all new and so forth and so on. Because we don't, we've got a business here, and we don't want people who do a shoddy job to destroy our reputation as well. And so, you know, but, and remember that campaign donation I gave you? So make sure that you cut off the lower rungs of this ladder to success for my competitors. That was the old way of doing things. The new way of doing things, of course, is to go in and make sure that you require people to buy your product, or that you get massive subsidies at the same time for people who buy your product while you penalize your competitors. That's the model of the battery electric car industry. But, of course, the government has an agenda that is part of that as well. That's a very effective tool of control. Control of your movement to make sure that they know where you're going, as well as to constrain your movement. But I want to talk about what's going on with this. I guess you could say that the Democrats, like Hillary Clinton, they see a vast conspiracy. Not a right-wing conspiracy, but an anti-vaccine conspiracy. And this article coming out of Connecticut, this is written, this is really a piece of filth by the Middletown Press. If you really want to take away people's freedom, where do you go? Connecticut. That's where you can get the gun laws, the lawsuits to shut down Remington, the lawsuits against InfoWars. You can shut down free speech. You can shut down the Second Amendment. You can shut down informed consent with people. And you can accuse these mothers who are showing up of being part of an anti-vaccine conspiracy, being funded by dark money. Why? Because, oh, well, I think they've spent more than $3,000, and they haven't filed all the paperwork. Well, you know, the reason they haven't filed all that paperwork is because they're a genuine grassroots movement. They said the anti-vaccination groups, Informed Choice Connecticut and Health Choice for Action, remain secret operations with no public scrutiny. A third group, the Connecticut Freedom Alliance, registered with the ethics office this week, but did not indicate a lobbying budget. The groups have attracted thousands of supporters to the Capitol this session. They have social media sites and websites. They have rented roadside billboard ads. They've created stickers and posters. And they said, I'm being harassed. While anti-vax parents and their children by the thousands have literally flooded the Capitol twice this session, first during a public hearing, and again when the Public Health Committee voted on pending legislation that would eventually end the state's religious exemption for parents who want their children to attend public schools. Looney, that's one of the leading Democrats. He is the Senate President Pro Tem. But, you know, I just want to make that we're talking about an actual person. I'm not talking about the Democrats in general, although that could apply. This guy's actually named Looney. Looney says that the parents of children with compromised immune system cannot safely take vaccines have been scared away from supporting the measure. Now think about that. This idiot, I mean, these people are, this guy, Looney, and this other Democrat, Duff. Looney and Duff. Sounds like a comedy team. But what they're doing is not funny. Looney and Duff are telling you that we have a sinister dark money thing going on here that is funding these thousands of parents. Anti-vax parents and their children by the thousands have flooded the Capitol on multiple occasions protesting this stuff. And I think it's being funded by dark. No, it's not. It's the ultimate grassroots movement. And now they're going to try to use reporting laws to take them down while slandering them, assuming that they're funded by dark money somewhere. And then you got this loony guy saying, hey, you know, these people have gotten parents of children with compromised immune system that can't safely take vaccines. They've got them afraid of backing out of these vaccine exemptions. Why do you think that would be loony? Do you think that these parents who have children with compromised immune systems might have the intelligence to realize that your mandates without any informed consent are endangering their kids, obviously endangering their kids? Are you kidding me? They go on to say, transparency is critical to an honest and effective public policy process. which means that they don't want you showing up and questioning them about anything that they're doing or who supports them, right? That's what they mean by transparency. And listen to this. He plays the Russian card. We know that transparency is critical to an honest and effective public policy process. We know that foreign governments are fueling public dissent in America on health care. He literally is implying that these genuine grassroots movements of thousands of anti-vax parents and their kids showing up to harass their rulers is actually being funded by Russians. This is it. It's all a Russian conspiracy. Can you believe this? And this is where the Democrats in Connecticut and elsewhere, that's where their heads are. That's what they're trying to tell you. The public deserves to know who's funding these groups that are actively lobbying legislators to endanger the health of our children. Yeah, we do need to know who is the vaccine companies that are funding these legislators. That's exactly it. And he goes on, adds this again, with massive foreign operations funding the anti-vaxxer movement. He's not implying it now. He's stating it. Foreign governments, probably Vladimir Putin, does not want you to vaccinate your kids because he wants them all to die. These people, on the other hand, pharmaceutical companies, they take the money from the pharmaceutical companies and they just have the best interest at heart for your children, right? He says, massive foreign operations funding the anti-vaxxer movement to undermine the public health of our nation. The public deserves to know how these organizations are being funded. And it just is absolutely amazing that these people resort to this kind of absurd, loony argument. All the facts show that Connecticut must increase vaccination numbers to protect public health, said Duff. Democrats stood up to the bullying and constant threats by these anti-healthcare organizations. Oh, see, they're not anti-healthcare. They're not anti-healthcare. They're anti-vaccine. They're anti-mandate. They say, we want to have informed consent, and then we make up our mind whether or not we want to have a vaccine or not. They're really not even anti-vaccine. They want informed consent. And then they throw this card in. With a backdrop of the coronavirus, it's imperative that we address the rise in non-medical exemptions from childhood immunizations. And so what you saw in Maine was, again, with the backdrop of the coronavirus spreading around the world, said the governor of Maine. Now, this was a quote from the Democrats. And then the Maine governor, Janet Mills, said exactly, with the backdrop of the coronavirus, we can no longer have informed consent about vaccines or any other health care. This is a talking point for the Democrats. These are the people who call themselves pro-choice. These are the people who say that they want women's health. No, they don't. She said the pharmaceutical companies hardly benefit at all from producing vaccines. These people are trying to target so-called big pharma. Their campaign's purposely trying to conflate vaccinations with other issues like the opioid epidemic. They're distinctly different. Yes, I mean, nobody would ever sell drugs that they knew would harm you just to make massive gobs of cash. As New American points out, this vaccine industry is worth $60 billion a year, and they've had their liability taken away. They don't have to worry about any adverse effects, do they? It's all taken care of. They were given immunity in 1986. All right, just a little bit more about this because, folks, this is an issue that's not going to go away. And I think this is going to be one of the lasting effects of this coronavirus. The coronavirus is eventually going to go away. You're going to create herd immunity, if you will. Herd immunity means that people get it. Some of them die. Most of them survive. The survivors then have immunity to that disease. You know, when you do it with vaccines, you don't get herd immunity. Can't get it. That term came up in the 1930s, talking about people who had measles and so forth. If you get a shot for measles, you don't get lasting immunity. You get damage to your immune system, but you don't get lasting immunity. And so there is no such thing as herd immunity. That's why you have people who have been vaccinated multiple times for measles become patient zero in a measles outbreak. So this is, you know, but that's what is being sold right now with the coronavirus. And as we look what happened in Maine, they pushed through, the Democrats in Maine pushed through a draconian measure that took away our informed consent, took away our freedom to determine what medications are going to be injected into our body or not. I mean, that is such a fundamental violation of your freedom and your humanity. How in the world can these Democrats who call themselves pro-choice, who are always saying, get your laws off of my body, right? And what they're talking about is killing a baby that is different sex half of the time than they are, many times has a different blood type, is a separate human being, and they consider that to be their body. But they are the ones who are pushing the idea that the government can push anything that it wants to into your body. And they have no problem with that. They demand that. And then at the same time, supporting a government that says, and if you want these other treatments, you're not going to get those other treatments. This is what you're going to get, and we don't care what you think. Not pro-choice at all, are they? And then you have this absurd narrative being sold by these freedom-sucking Democrats in Connecticut, saying that these thousands of women, mothers and kids and stuff who show up harassing us as we're trying to do our work to regulate their lives, how dare them? Where did they come from? I think they're getting dark money. We know that foreign governments, Russia, is funding this everywhere. So we need to know where they're getting their $3,000. Who's paying them to run a social media site on Facebook, right? Yeah. For their AstroTurf movements, they do have a lot of money that is spent. As a matter of fact, you know, people are really upset with Bloomberg because Bloomberg had promised all the people that win, lose, or draw, they were going to have a job with him through November. And he just cut them off. Yeah, that's what you get for trying to elect an authoritarian despot who doesn't have any regard for anybody. You basically got what you deserved. But when we look at this, in Maine, using the same rhetoric that these Democrats in Connecticut are saying, you know, with the backdrop of the coronavirus, we need to make sure that we eradicate any last medical freedom that people have. And that's going to be the lasting effect. That's what's going to be the ratchet effect of all this fear once the coronavirus has run its course. And so you see in Maine, you have the governor there, Janet Mills, saying these people are talking about Big Pharma. They're trying to conflate it with opioids. You know, who would ever think that Big Pharma would make a lot of money? And as I point out, New American, that's $60 billion a year that they're making profits. That is up from $24 billion just in 2016. So in 3 years, they have tripled their profits, or their sales, I should say. And this is an industry that is unique in the sense not only have they tripled their sales by getting Democrats to push mandates to buy their products, regardless of the health risks, but they don't have to worry about any legal liability for their product. Is there any other company that has absolutely no legal liability for anything they manufacture? Not a single one. If you're injured by a vaccine, it doesn't matter if the vaccine itself was faulty from the get-go, if it had poisons or toxins in it or something like that. They should have tested it, should have known about that. They should have known about the long-term. No, none of that is necessary. If it is manufactured improperly, you still don't have any protection. I mean, it could be if you have a product that's out there that is designed properly, but it is manufactured in a faulty way, then the people have liability, but not the pharmaceutical company, right? And then these are the same people in Connecticut that are trying to come after Remington, saying, you know, we have the Second Amendment and we have the laws that were passed in Congress to specifically protect the firearms manufacturers from being sued like this. But they said, well, we don't care about that in Connecticut. We're going to come after them anyway because we allege that the gun was used to kill people. And so, therefore, they're liable for that. Just like, you know, if somebody used a Ford to run people down, they sue Ford. No, you don't do that. But this is the mindset of the Democrats. And to get that in perspective, the entire recording music industry is only a $20 billion industry. And that's about where the vaccines were 3 years ago. Now they've tripled in size. By siding with the big corporations instead of the people, Governor Mills is selling Maine out and sacrificing our fundamental right to make all of our own medical decisions, said a spokesperson for Yes on One, which was defeated, again, with the backdrop of the coronavirus panic. Angie Kinney, a mother who used the philosophical exemption to refuse immunizations for her child after her older daughter had an adverse reaction to the chickenpox vaccine at 18 months. She could not crawl. She could not walk. She couldn't even feed herself. And this went on for almost a year. Her daughter was diagnosed with ataxia, a brain injury, listed by the CDC as a known adverse response to the chickenpox vaccine. Her daughter recovered. That doesn't always happen. A lot of people don't know that they can even get any compensation from the arbitration process. They don't even know the vaccine court exists. But as we look at this, you know, I look at this bioweapon situation, why would you be surprised, I guess, to think that the Navy is working on a killer robot submarine that is autonomous? It can make the kill decisions on its own. It can evade foreign interceptors on its own, do complex missions, evade anti-submarine measures and so forth, and destroy on its own without any input from anybody. Why would you think that they would do that? I mean, we stop and think about it. Aren't autonomous killing robots essentially the same in essence as bioweapons? You know, they create these bioweapons, and then the virus or the bacteria, this monster that they've created, goes out and kills on its own. And maybe it gets out of hand. And, you know, maybe these killer robots will get out of hand the same way. If we're going to be concerned about pandemics, if we're going to be concerned about gain of function and weaponizing bacteria and virus, maybe we should also be concerned about weaponizing artificial intelligence with killer robots. It's essentially the same thing. When we come back, we're going to talk about Joe Biden and his record on Iraq, on weapons of mass destruction, and on the Pentagon's newest idea to... for nuclear proliferation and weapons of mass. If the Iraqis don't have it, we'll send them nuclear reactors.
Using free speech to free minds. This is the David Knight Show.
All right, so this story that came out yesterday on Defense News, you saw it on the Drudge Report. Pentagon awards contracts to design mobile nuclear reactor. The Pentagon on Monday issued three contracts to start design work on mobile small nuclear reactors as part of a two-step plan towards achieving nuclear power for American forces at home and abroad. Now, there's a lot of things, I think, behind this. First of all, we've seen on multiple occasions, we see the Pentagon and others saying, global warming is a greater threat to the U.S. than ISIS is. We've seen the Navy saying, you know, I don't know how we're going to do this, but we're going to get rid of all, you know, fossil fuels. Got to do that. That's our number one priority. And so maybe that's part of this, because all the greenies love nuclear power. I'm not a big fan. Not a fan. This is not Mr. Fusion, okay? This is not Back to the Future, and this is not fusion. This is nuclear reactors with fissional material. Fissile material, which can, if you're going to put this in a military type of situation, isn't it a possibility that the base could be overrun? Does that ever happen? That these nuclear reactors could fall into the hands of bad people? That it could be a form of nuclear proliferation? That we could wind up with WMDs in the hands of other people because we put them there? I mean, this is absolutely amazing to me. See that small nuclear microreactors designed to potentially before deployed. A development of safe, mobile, advanced nuclear microreactors to support a variety of Department of Defense missions, such as generating power for remote operating bases. Because, you know, this is the other part of this. It tells you that the military industrial complex envisions this military empire that they've created and the permanent bases that they've set up everywhere in the world. They envision that to continue on until this empire collapses under its own weight, as always does with empires, and taking the U.S. down with it. Because the military-industrial complex, even though it is a parasite located here in the United States, it is not the United States. It is a parasite. And so when we look at this and we talk about weapons of mass destruction, let's go back and take a look at Joe Biden's record, because he had an important statement yesterday. And there is another set of primaries today. We're going to be talking about that here. Let's run video clip number six, because he admits that he voted for the Iraq War. He thought it was a mistake. Now he thinks it's a mistake, but he said he did it because he wanted to prevent a war. Well, that's why we always invade these other countries, because we want to prevent a war, right? Isn't that why we always do that? Isn't that what the Japanese are? Pearl Harbor? We operate like the Japanese now with every war that we have. We don't wait until they attack us. No, can't do that. Can't do that. We're not going to declare why we're doing the war. We're not going to say the cause of it. We're not going to wait to be attacked. We're not going to talk about what winning looks like. No, no, no. We don't abide by any of the principles of a justified war that were defined for Christian societies. We don't do that anymore. We just do power. We do that power thing. Let's play video clip number six.
I didn't believe he had those nuclear weapons. I didn't believe he had those weapons of mass destruction. And you may remember the debates we had after that period about when Colin said, anyway. So that was the rationale. Mm-hmm. What happened was we went in, determined that they hyped what in fact was occurring. They didn't. There was no concrete proof of what he was doing. And they still went to war. And the irony of all ironies is the first thing that Barack Obama did when we got elected president and vice president was turn to me and say, end the war. Not a joke. You run the deal to bring out 150,000+ combat troops from Iraq. And I did. So, you know, the idea that I took the word of a president saying that he wasn't going to go to war, this was a way to avoid going to war, was in fact a mistake. It was a mistake. I've acknowledged that 15 years ago. But the idea that Bernie Sanders' judgment on foreign policy is superior to mine, I'm anxious to debate him on that question.
So he's trying to explain why he voted for the Iraq War. You know, he was just deceived by Bush. That was his problem. He didn't have the sufficient judgment on his own. And, you know, all this weapons of mass destruction type of thing. But here's what he had to say in video. Let's play video clip number seven. This is what he had to say back in 2002 as it was unfolding. Video clip number seven.
They do care about their children. But over 200,000 parents have lost over 3,780 of their children. Over 27,884 of them have been wounded. How many more fallen angels are going to have to, we're going to have to sustain how we're going to bring these bodies home before we end George Bush's war? And the fact of the matter is, George Bush has said something unconscionable. What he said last Thursday was, I have no plan to end this war. I'm handing it off to the next guy, next woman. Folks, you're looking at one of us going to have to end this war. One of us on this stage will have to end this war. And the next president's going to be left with virtually no margin for error. They better be smarter than their Secretary of State, and they better have the confidence of the American people because they have the depth and breadth of knowledge to be able to end it and do it without chaos.
Oh, yeah, we wound up. That was 2007. We wound up with Obama, and we wound up with Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State. Yeah, that worked out really well for us in Libya, didn't it? We got those clips out of order. I wanted to play the one in 2002. We'll play that for you in a second. But remember, in 2007, that was his second presidential campaign. You know, he just won. He's had three presidential campaigns, and, you know, he won his first primary with South Carolina. And then that was it. I mean, he was the anointed one at that point. and he had the big Super Tuesday, more votes today. But in 2007... in his second campaign, he was saying, one of us is going to, it's going to be up to us to end George Bush's war. Well, you know, George Bush's war, it's kind of Wikipedia covers this. And, you know, he talks about how they ended the Iraq War, right? And that is the talking points of the mainstream media and the left. They ended George Bush's war. Barack Obama did it in 2011. Don't you remember? We're not there, even though we just had a couple more soldiers die in Iraq today. The war has been over since Obama ended it back in 2011. Remember that? And the narrative as to how they imagine this, and it is an imagination, say, well, you had the armed conflict that began in 2003, and we'll play for you the clip back in 2002 when they were debating it, and Biden was all gung-ho to do it. But it commenced in 2003. Then troops were officially withdrawn, they said, in 2011. Not all of them. And then following the spread of the Syrian civil war and ISIS, they redeployed more forces to Iraq in 2014, and now it is a civil war. And so you see, we've had three different conflicts, according to the mainstream media narrative. But no, folks, what we had was an invasion. And that is very quickly ended in just a couple of months. That's when George Bush goes in and says, it's over. Mission accomplished. They won the conventional warfare. And then what happened after just the first couple of months, not in 2011, but just after the first couple of months, they settled into what's called asymmetric warfare, where they try to occupy the country. You know, then in the future, they'll be bringing in these little micro-nuclear reactors as well. How's that going to work out for them? Those will probably make some pretty good roadside bombs once they overrun and steal some of that, right? But they kind of settled into an asymmetric warfare, which we have never won an asymmetric war. Asymmetric in the sense that we have overwhelming military weapons, and we're fighting against people who have nothing but small arms and a will to liberate their country. And I think there's a lesson in this for these gun-grabbing, bravado Democrats like Beto O'Rourke and Eric Swalwell and Joe Biden saying, yeah, we've got jets and we can, you think you're going to keep your guns? We got jets. We can easily conquer you. Or Eric Swalwell, we got nuclear weapons and we'll conquer you. Well, you haven't been able to do that in Iraq, have you? It's called asymmetric warfare. You don't really want to do that. And the Second Amendment is about a restraint on a tyrannical government. And the hope is that it doesn't go into mutually assured destruction, that you have somebody who has a temperament not to go there. Democrats are not offering anybody like that. Welcome back. We're going to talk about the primaries coming up tonight, as well as Biden. Got one more thing to play for you about the Iraq war. First, he's now saying, well, you know, it was a mistake. I just wanted to prevent a war. I thought if we invaded them, we could prevent a war. And then in 2007, he said, yeah, the next president's going to end this war. And yet here we are, 2020. We still have American troops dying there. Because asymmetric warfare has never been won by the United States government. It's easy enough for us to win in a conventional war. We have overwhelming force on our side, but not an asymmetric war where we go in and occupy a country and, quote-unquote, build a nation. And that's what's been going on. You know, it was allegedly ended by Obama in 2011. No, not really. Before we do, however, I just want to remind you about the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. You need to prepare right now, as they're starting to talk a little bit more detail about the profile of this disease, the risk factors, and so forth. We see that this disproportionately affects older people. The numbers coming out of China said for those in their 80s, the casualty figures are 14%. It was about 8% for those in their 70s. Now we're told that those who are above 60 and or have high blood pressure and or cardiovascular issues, that those are the factors that they've noticed that make it go very quickly from a cold to a life-threatening situation. So they're telling people, look, if you're over 60, you just need to make sure that you are prepared to self-isolate until this thing blows over. And that means that you have storable food. You have other supplies at home. You have things that are going to help you to maintain your health. vitamins, supplements, and so forth. We have our vitamin mineral fusion drink mix, a great way to get your baseline vitamins, minerals, amino acids without taking a lot of pills. And of course, we have things like DNA Force. I take that on a daily basis. Many different natural supplements we have available at InfoWarsStore.com. And of course, the storable food. If you haven't gotten your storable food, we still have availability on that. Our supplier has upped production. It's made in America. It's non-GMO. It'll last for 25 years if you don't need it this time around. And it will also, one of the effects that may be coming out of this, you may need this to try to keep from getting exposed to things. But look, we don't know what's going to happen to the economy. If you got the money right now, you need to make sure that at least you'll be able to eat in the future. You don't know what's happened to food prices or anything else as we look at this shaky economy right now. This could be a trigger to create a very, very difficult and prolonged recession or even a depression. That has always been in the cards with the massive buildup of this economic bubble in the wake of 2008. So take a look at the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. Make sure that you are prepared. Make sure that you have the products that you need to eat, to drink clean water, and to provide for your baseline health. InfoWarsStore.com. All right, I want to go back and play the clip that was in 2002 because this is Biden saying, you know, he's kind of reluctant. He was misled. This is what everybody says, right? He's trying to back off from the fact that he supported the Iraq War when Bernie didn't. And so you heard the clip of him saying that. You heard the clip of him 2007 saying they're going to end the war. But here's 2002 where he was gung-ho, let's go get him. Video clip.
I will vote for the Lieberman-Warner Amendment to authorize the use of military force against Iraq. And unlike my colleague from West Virginia and Maryland, I do not believe this is a rush to war. I believe it's a march to peace and security.
Oh, yeah. He's not rushing to it. He likes it. He thinks this is great. This is about our peace and security. And here we are. We're still peaceful and secure 18 years later, right? No, we don't have peace. We don't have security. And it's still there. And so he can spend that any way that he wants. I think one of the other things that's kind of interesting, you look at those clips of him from 2002, 2007, the mental decline of Joe Biden. And of course, that's something that you're not allowed to talk about now. That gets you banned on Twitter if you talk about that. However, there's a good satire piece from the gloriousamerican.com. DNC has come up with a new debate format that will allow Joe Biden to sleep in a chair. I think they are going to aren't they going to let them sit on chairs instead of standing up the whole time in recognition of their advanced years? Joe Biden being 77 and 78. But they take it a step further. They say in a debate format change announced over the weekend, Joe Biden will be allowed to participate while sleeping in a large recliner. The DNC decided on this rule after the former vice president made some unforced errors over the weekend. In just the last 36 hours, Joe Biden forgot who he was. He endorsed President Trump, and he made a series of ethnic slurs towards some disabled children. Yes, Joe had a busy and colorful weekend, said DNC Chairman Tom Perez. But this new rule did not take that into account. We just feel the two candidates should have a more casual discussion. Who knows? Maybe pop a few Valium? I don't know exactly. We'll see how it goes. Again, just for the Daily Beast, who will try to get me taken off of any social media that I happen to be on at the moment. That was a satire, Daily Beast. I know it's difficult. It's difficult to distinguish the Democrat Party from satire, but that was a satire piece, a good one from the Glorious American. Democrats and their media allies impugned Biden's cognitive fitness, but now they feign outrage. And this is coming from Glenn Greenwald with The Intercept. And he is exactly right. Caitlin Johnstone has been saying the same thing. They're very upset about the fact that that Democrats are putting up somebody who clearly needs to have a test for dementia or Alzheimer's. If you look at what he is saying on a regular basis, I think that there's something else in line with this. And I said from the very beginning, when all of this impeachment stuff began, what turned into impeachment, I said, I think that Biden is as much in the crosshairs as President Trump. But, you know, the campaign is a dynamic thing, and they have to react as they go along. As Bernie Sanders got stronger and stronger, and none of these other people emerged, and Bloomberg was a total failure, they decided, I think, that they're going to prop up Joe Biden. Who knows? They may still have a situation once they get to the convention where they decide that, yeah, we just did a medical test on him and he's not fit to finish this. So we're going to have to change this all up right now here at the convention. Or they'll pick somebody, you know, like maybe Hillary Clinton is waiting in the wings or Michelle Obama as the VP. And then they can take the easy route to power after Joe Biden is removed, either before or just after the election, if he were to succeed. I think that maybe is what they have in mind. Nevertheless, they are the ones who are out there coming after anybody who has the audacity to point out Joe Biden's gaffes. Amy Klobuchar, by the way, either had a gaffe or she was making a very shrewd bid to say, remember me? And, oh, by the way, I'm available for the VP slot. On Saturday, she told a crowd in Grand Rapids, Michigan, that she couldn't think of a better way to end my candidacy than to join the Biden ticket. She quickly corrected the alleged verbal slip-up, which drew cheers from supporters. She said, just kidding. And she got her supporters cheering, Amy, Amy, Amy. Despite her explanation, her comments have triggered speculation that she may be Biden's vice president if he were to get the Democrat Party's presidential nomination, which is probably precisely what she wanted that to trigger. And so when we look at Joe Biden's latest gaffe, and we'll take a look when we come back at what's going to be happening today in terms of primary as they try to win another Tuesday for the gaffer. Let's play video clip number four. This is the one that has been censored by Twitter. And they have pushed back against President Trump because they retweeted this clip. And they said this is doctored or manufactured or whatever. But take a look at this. It's not. Let's play that clip, video clip number four.
Turn this primary from a campaign that's about negative attacks into one about what we're for, because we cannot get reelect. We cannot win this reelection. Excuse me. We can only reelect Donald Trump.
Okay. Well, all they did with that, you heard that very uncomfortable example of the dementia party. But all he said after that was he said, you know, we can only reelect Donald Trump if we, and he had some kind of a tag on it, if we fight amongst ourselves or something like that. And they just cut that off. And because they cut that off, Twitter says, oh, you're not going to be allowed to put that out. They have put themselves in the position of directly interfering with our election. On many occasions, Jack Dorsey has said, not only are they the free speech wing of the free speech party, but he also said it is the digital public square. And even if it's privately owned, they shouldn't be able to own your speech. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Broadcasting with the power of the First Amendment. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. We're just talking about how Twitter is trying to manipulate the election. And they're pretty transparent about it, quite frankly. Just doing whatever they wish. You had a federal judge tell President Trump at one point in time, remember a year or 2 years ago? Federal judge said, you can't block any Twitter trolls on your own personal account. Now, there is a POTUS account, President of the United States. There is a POTUS, official POTUS account. But this is President Trump's own personal account that he had well before he ran for president. And I said, you can't block anybody on there. And yet you can have, at the same time that was coming out, you had Jack Dorsey, as CEO of Twitter, say, I could kick President Trump off of my platform if I wanted to. Or he could leave him on there and then kick off certain videos that are put up there. I just played for you that video of Joe Biden. There are no cuts in that video. None whatsoever. What you see is exactly what Joe Biden said. But Twitter tagged it as manipulated video. What was the claim that Twitter had? Well, their problem is that they cut it right there. We said, well, the only choices we have is that we can elect President Trump, re-elect President Trump, if, in fact, we get engaged in this circular firing squad here. So they cut off the, if we get engaged in the circular firing squad here, they cut that off. And because of that, they said, you manipulated the video. No, the point of the video was that he didn't know what he was saying, that he was tongue-tied, that he was having difficulty recalling information. All of those are classic symptoms of dementia. That was the point of the video. They did not manipulate the video. It is Twitter who is trying to manipulate the elections. President Trump's camp replied. You had the Trump campaign rapid response director, Andrew Clark, said on Fox News, the Biden campaign is scared as hell that voters will see the flood of unedited and embarrassing verbal stumbles that will continue to go viral if status quo Joe is a nominee. Twitter should not be an enforcement arm of Joe Biden's campaign strategy, but if they choose to police every video clip, they must hold his own campaign to the same standards. Well, of course they're not. I mean, you heard Bloomberg say, well, you know, the Bloomberg editor, much to the chagrin of the Bloomberg reporters who said, this isn't what we signed up for. The Bloomberg editor said, we're not going to put out anything negative about Mike. Oh, and we'll be fair. We won't put out anything negative about the Democrats either, but we will put out negative stuff about President Trump. And that's exactly what Twitter is doing. You saw this last week. You had a New York Post journalist who was censored on Twitter. They put him in a one-day timeout because they didn't like what he had to say. He exposed a socialist, as Breitbart calls him, a champagne socialist, Carlos Maza. So he had tweeted out pictures in his recent article. YouTube socialist Carlos Maza slams the wealthy but lived in luxury. And he showed pictures of his $10 million mansion in Florida that was owned by his family. The pictures are publicly viewable on the real estate websites where Levine obtained them. Levine's tweets about socialism and Marxism were archived, a public record, and so forth. But by putting that together and writing an article, the New York Post journalist was censored on Twitter. And, you know, again, a champagne socialist. Is there any other kind? They're either champagne socialists before they get power or they're champagne socialists after they get power. I mean, just take a look at Venezuela. As the people in the streets are chasing down cats and dogs to eat, you have the children of these communist leaders who are posing with pictures of their hypercars, their multi-million dollar cars and their clothing and their jewelry and their travel and so forth. They become Instagram stars in their own right. When we come back, we're going to take a look at the what is happening tonight at the next primary. And I love this term that Caitlin Johnstone has, gaslighting. It's kind of like gaslighting, but it's don't pay any attention to those gaffes of Joe Biden. It's gaslighting.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
So, is it unfair to question the mental capacity of Joe Biden, as I tweeted out, you know, as Twitter puts out new rules saying we're not going to have any remarks made about people's ages? I wonder who they're saying that about. Yeah, we know. And we know as they just pushed back against the Trump campaign, said, no, you can't put that video out. It was manipulated. You cut off the end there where he finally started talking correctly after he stumbled on and on and on. It was not manipulated. What you saw there was what he actually said. Look, a manipulated video is a deep fake video where you put words in somebody's mouth that they didn't say. You always edit content to show people saying something. But this is the kind of speech rules that we're now seeing. You know, we've got China saying that it is rude and vicious for Pompeo to refer to the Chinese coronavirus as being Chinese. Don't call it the Wuhan virus. Don't call it the Wuhan flu. Don't call it any of that stuff. That is racist if you call it Wuhan virus. And you've got mainstream media people who want to ingratiate themselves to the Chinese, you know, because they work for big media companies who don't want to have their films or their cable channels booted out of China. And they say, don't call it that, right? That's racist to do. That's the kind of speech rules that they're imposing on everybody. We've got Wikipedia, for example, censoring a list of scientists who don't agree with the global warming consensus. And this is a list that's been put together many times. Over 30,000 scientists who signed up to this and said, look, this is not science. You know, if you go back to Francis Bacon's determination, you know, the four principles of scientific investigation, it's got to be repeatable, verifiable, experiment, you know, and you're not going to rely on arguments from authority, all these different things. You're not going to bring your own personal prejudices into that. I mean, they violate every one of the four tenets of Francis Bacon's scientific method. And then you've got people like AOC saying, well, it's just science. It's just science. She doesn't even know what science is. She doesn't even know the long term, because she doesn't know anything about history, just like she doesn't know anything about economics. But you got Wikipedia now censoring that list of people. And of course, Wikipedia is not a reliable source of information itself, but it is a pattern of behavior where you are going to select the terms that people are able to use. You're going to put the terms out there. Say this, say progressive. Don't say socialist or communist. Say progressive, because people don't know what that means. And it sounds good, right? That's how they got liberal. They stole that from people who believed in liberty, people who believed in economic liberty and individual liberty. They don't believe in any economic liberty, as we talked about earlier in the program. You know, when they look at an economic response, they think that if things are looking bad because you've had the Federal Reserve create a giant bubble in the stock markets and people are reacting to this slowdown in China where they created the global manufacturing base. Well, now the federal government needs to come in and solve that, because everything can be saved by the Federal Reserve and the federal government. So we need to lower interest rates. We need to do other things. And so the Democrats will come up with, well, let's do a direct handout. The Republicans will say, let's do a tax cut. I don't agree with either of those, frankly, but certainly a tax cut is more in line with the market economy than just handouts, because handouts empower them instead of allowing you to keep something that you've earned, thereby incentivizing you to work and to earn money. Instead, you're going to incentivize people to just step back and collect a check and become more and more passive and dependent on government. It only empowers the government to do handouts, but that is the way the Democrats operate. But as we look at this, one of the best examples of what is not going to be allowed to be said is to say anything about somebody because of their age, or to put up any clips that show the dementia of Joe Biden. And so Caitlin Johnstone calls it gaslighting of the public. It's not gaslighting, but it's gaslighting. Don't pay any attention to those gaffes. She says, I can imagine a dialogue, oh, I never want to think about 2016 again, said the Democrats. Well, the good news is the 2020 election can't possibly go any worse. True. I mean, the Democrats would have to literally run an actual clinically diagnosable dementia victim to do any worse in 2020. Voila. We have Joe Biden. She says the entire 2020 U.S. election may come down to a race between time and the progression of Joe Biden's dementia. And again, I'm very anxious to see what they're going to do on the VP slot. Like I said, with Obama jumping in with both feet on the side of Biden, who in the early campaign, remember, he was constantly giving Joe Biden the cold shoulder. But now as the race shapes up, you know, he gets on the phone, multiple phone calls to Buttigieg. He makes a phone call where he does a conference call. Joe Biden is also on the line. They have a three-way call with Buttigieg. And, you know, you have an opportunity where you can really shape things here. There might be something in this for you. Well, I'll have to think about that, because of the time he wasn't doing that bad in the primaries. And then Amy Klobuchar gets a call from Obama, or perhaps, we don't know. She's not telling anybody exactly what was said to her or promised to her. But she goes public with an endorsement of Biden, and so then Boudier sees that the moment is slipping away from him, so he jumps in. Then Beto O'Rourke gets a call from Obama. We do know that he got a call from Obama. So Obama is pulling the strings for Biden. And as I said, I really do think that he's preparing the way for Michelle. Either he wants to make sure that Michelle is a VP on the ticket, or he wants to make sure that there's not going to be an incumbent Democrat to run against in 2024. And one way or the other, that's probably going to be the case with Biden. I don't think he's going to win. Former Clinton advisor, of course, this is Dick Morris, who now is a Republican, but you can call him a former Clinton advisor, says Biden should be required to have a test for Alzheimer's. And so you have Politico coming out and saying Trump and the GOP mount a coordinated campaign to paint Biden as senile. Yes, it is a very insidious campaign, Politico. Their campaign is going to be coordinated. They're going to actually put out clips of Biden speaking at public events. That's what they're going to use to paint him as senile. And again, earlier I just read for you the satire where they said they're going to give him a nice big easy chair for the debates. They're going to allow the two candidates to sit for questions in the upcoming debate, which will be in Arizona on March 15th. But tonight we have another primary, and we have, I think it is, 6 states that are going to be in play tonight. And one of the interesting things about tonight is that you've got a lot of states that have a lot of odd electors. And what I mean by that is that the way the Democrats set things up, they allocate delegates on a district-by-district basis, corresponding to congressional districts. And so they have a group of delegates within each congressional district. And in some cases, for a lot of the districts in tonight's states, have a lot of districts that have an odd number of delegates, which means that if the two candidates are roughly equal, you could wind up, if you're just slightly ahead of the other guy, you could wind up getting another delegate than he does. And, of course, I say he because the only other candidate that's still in the race is Tulsi Gabbard, but you have to get past 15% in order to get any delegates, and nobody is expecting that to happen with Tulsi Gabbard. So it looks like from this point on, the only people that are going to be getting delegates are going to be Biden and Bernie. And so tonight they've got a lot of districts that'll have an odd number of delegates, which means that even in a razor-thin race, one individual could get more than the others. In subsequent races, it's going to be predominantly even number. I don't know why it works out that way, but it does. And so at that point, then it's going to be harder for somebody to pull away from the other guy. So it's going to be kind of interesting to see what happens tonight with the delegates. It's not a super delegate situation, but it is kind of a mathematical oddity. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Well, Chuck Schumer got the spotlight last week in a way that he didn't really perhaps want. Maybe he did want it. Maybe he did want to become a hero to the left by threatening Supreme Court justices. But even though he's a senator, even though he's a lawyer, maybe he wasn't aware that that is a felony to threaten judges about a case that they're currently ruling on. And to do it right in front of the courthouse, that's another crime in and of itself. There at the Supreme Court, they have a specific crime about that. But in response to that, you had the Gun Owners of America asking New York to red flag Senator Chuck Schumer. This is a dangerous individual. I think that you should file a file an order with him to surrender any guns that he may have. Now, I don't know if that includes the guns that his bodyguards have. Can you red flag bodyguards? Probably not. That's why he is safe, right? After saying that Kavanaugh and Gorsuch would pay the price on this decision. Oh, no, I wasn't talking about them. I was talking about Republicans in general at the election. No, no, no. He said, you will pay the price if you make this decision, Gorsuch and Kavanaugh. No, no, he wasn't talking about them. But in a letter to the New York governor, Andrew Cuomo, Gun Owners of America's senior vice president, Eric Pratt, highlighted the gun rights group and how their opposition to the New York red flag law, also laid out how they're concerned that the courts are disproportionately executing red flag laws in minority and poor neighborhoods. Well, that's because they've got the memo from Bloomberg. He Xeroxed it, right? This is what they look like. You know, these young blacks, just throw them up against the wall. That's all your crime right there. That's how you do it. It's still the operating procedure of Andrew Cuomo and the Democrats. The group further states the organization believes that the rich and powerful might get a pass when it comes to red flag laws. So they said, you know, by the way, we've got Chuck Schumer. He's this dangerous individual violating, committing felonies on the steps of the Supreme Court. Pratt asserts if New York decides not to enforce their red flag law against Senator Schumer, then it would show that New York's gun laws are applied harshly to the general public while leaving the rich and powerful immune from such enforcement, as is always the case. And, of course, you remember the story of Gary Willis, age 61, is recounted in the letter as well, in Maryland. He was shot and killed by police because they were serving a red flag gun order against him. And it was filed by his sister because of a dispute about their mother's care. He didn't understand what it was. And the police were concerned for their safety, so they shot him when they went to pick up his guns. And he was absolutely surprised that they were there to do that. Meanwhile, Chuck Schumer and his super PAC has been filed with a Federal Elections Commission complaint by a group, the Foundation for Accountability and Civic Trust. On Monday, yesterday, they filed the complaint with the FEC, alleging that a Democrat candidate in Iowa is coordinating illegally with the super PAC that is affiliated and essentially run by Chuck Schumer as the minority leader of the Senate. The majority PAC, they said, violated election laws when the super PAC produced a pro-Greenfield, that's the candidate's name, a pro-Greenfield TV ad that mirrored language from a document the campaign posted to its website several weeks earlier. The ad also used video footage that Greenfield's campaign had posted. Several federal candidates have used their campaign websites to request outside organizations with which they are prohibited from coordinating, produce, and run TV advertisements on their behalf. So, you know, I don't know. He'll probably get away with that. I mean, if you can threaten two Supreme Court justices on the steps of the Supreme Court and do it about a case that they're currently ruling on and not have anything done to you, not even a censure, of course, you know, he'll get away with that. Just like we saw James Clapper lie about Dragnet surveillance to the American public under oath on television. And we played that clip many times. I mean, it's not a question. It's kind of like Joe Biden bragging about how he used his power to get a Ukrainian prosecutor thrown out. You can do this stuff and you can do it on television. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Because there really is one standard for them and another one for the rest of us. But, you know, what he was talking about, the reason he was threatening them, of course, was because they were ruling on a case that reflects on abortion. The Democrats, like Chuck Schumer, want abortion in all cases, even if it may threaten the lives of women. They keep saying this is about women's health care. But as I pointed out, the very case that's being argued before the Supreme Court out of Louisiana was put in by a Democrat woman in Louisiana because she said, I want to protect women's health. I'm serious about this. And I played for you another woman who said, I am an atheist, a feminist, and I support her. I think she's a hero for doing this because we do need to protect women's health. Meanwhile, you got Chuck Schumer and the rabid abortionists who say, we don't care about women's health. We really don't. You got to have as many abortions as possible. Nothing that is going to slow down the abortion mill grinding up babies for profits. And so while you got some pro-life students in Washington State rallying and praying against abortion on campus on this last Saturday, part of the annual 40 Days for Life campaign, as they're out there, surprisingly, what a surprise. They have, and we got video of it, an abortion supporter driving by screaming, "Hail Satan." Why do they keep doing that? I mean, they did this in Texas when we're talking about, you know, the law that eventually was struck down by the Supreme Court to protect women's health in the wake of what had happened with the Gosnell murder of a woman of color, a migrant, nevertheless, right? Complications happened in Gosnell's clinic. They couldn't get the gurneys and the emergency personnel couldn't get in there to get her out. And so she died. And so the people in Texas said, well, we need to make sure that you've got basic access. Doorways and hallways are going to be wide enough that you can get a gurney in there to get somebody to the hospital. No. Can't do that. And as you had people there praying at the state capitol in Texas, you had these supporters who played at the time screaming, "Hail Satan." Now they're doing it again, this time in Washington State. Here's a video clip, video clip 5.
Sorry. I'm sorry for you.
What did you say?
Satan is the one true Lord. Satan, the dark Lord.
You have a sweet baby back there.
Oh, yeah, I didn't abort her.
That's good.
Yeah.
We're just out here praying and trying to support the community.
We don't need your prayers.
You do, hon. Have a good night.
Hail Satan!
Yeah, these people are very proud of it. They like to get in your face. I mean, that happened to my wife and my daughter a couple of years ago down at the abortion clinic here. My daughter, they spit on her. My wife, they bragged, said, I kill my kids. We've played that clip many, many times here at InfoWars, bragging about that. I kill my kids. That's exactly where we are, folks. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be right back, and we'll talk about something else that I think is very important. Whether or not, and at what point can you talk to children about their gender? Some speech is not the same as some other speech. And it all kind of is reflected in the Saudis executing a teenager for a crime that he committed when he was 9 years old. We'll talk about how those two things are connected when we come back. Stay with us.
Decoding the mainstream propaganda. It's the David Knight Show.
Well, you know, Joe Biden is on the campaign trail, and there's never a dull moment. It wasn't that long ago. He told the guy, you're a lying dog-faced pony soldier. Well, today he tells a Detroit worker as he's campaigning, you're full of excrement. Why did he say that? Well, the guy said, you're going to take away our guns, the worker told Biden as he walked by in close quarters, surrounded by workers and the media. Biden immediately responded, you're full of crap, except to use the S word. And then a woman who tries to interject, he says, shush, I support the Second Amendment. Yeah, that's why when he got the support of Beto O'Rourke, Robert Francis O'Rourke, who goes by the alias Beto the Trans-Hispanic, that's why he said, I'm going to have him in charge of taking the guns, right? And you think you're not going to take the gun? I'm going to use jets against you. But now he says, I support the Second Amendment. Okay, so Second Amendment, right now, if you yell fire, that's not free speech. Now, that's the exercising of the Second Amendment when you yell fire. Joe Biden, it's going to be an interesting campaign. So now he's gone from lying dog-faced pony soldier to a little bit more direct and explicit in his opposition to people. But I wanted to talk about Saudi Arabia for a moment, our head-chopping allies. And, of course, they execute people. There's a picture on the Daily Star just a split second before execution. You've got a blindfolded person, hands tied on their knees and standing behind him or her, as they do that to women as well, is a Saudi with a sword in his hand, ready to lop off his head, which they do hundreds of times a year for various things that are not even recognized as crimes anywhere else. Usually they're Islamic violations. But they're going to execute a teenager for a crime they allegedly did when he was just 9 years old. And I think what they do is they wait. The age of execution is 18. So they, you know, this kid committed a crime when he was 9. What did a 9-year-old do that was so heinous that it warranted execution? Well, this 9-year-old went to the funeral of a victim of a man killed by the Saudi special forces. So they would assume this guy is opposed to the regime, therefore a terrorist, right? And if you go to the funeral of a terrorist, even as a 9-year-old, they arrest you and sentence you to death, but they wait until you're 18 years old. Why would they do that? Why would they not want to be seen executing a child? I mean, you know, they're not really paying any attention to, the fact that this person is an adult making adult decisions. I mean, that's typically the way the rest of the world will try individuals. I say, well, you know, this is something that was done as when this individual was a child. And, of course, the left has always supported that. And I think they're right to support that. You know, we're not going to sentence somebody necessarily to life or to being executed if they did something as a 9-year-old. You may want to keep a really close eye on them, but it is, you know, still, they don't have all of their faculties. It's one of the reasons why we don't let 9-year-olds vote. We don't let them drink. We don't let them drive. We don't let them own firearms or whatever, right? There is a certain amount of responsibility that comes with age and judgment, but of course that same rule is not applied by liberals when we start talking about transgenderism, is it? No, all bets are off. No. Come and take them. They're kindergartners, and they're ripe for the plucking by the drag queen story time people. This is what's happening in Canada. Canada has now presented a bill that bans any conversion therapy. Now, this is about psychological counseling that would help somebody, but it's specifically targeted to minors. Who are confused about their gender identity. And remember, we have been told when we had homosexual marriage mandated by the Supreme Court, we were told, look, I was born this way. We had Buttigieg begin his campaign by attacking Vice President Pence. God made me this way, he said. We got a gay gene or whatever. It's biological. And yet, when we talk about gender identity, that's all psychological. And it can change at any point. There, don't you dare talk about biology or two genders or anything like that. It's all psychological. But don't go to a psychologist unless the psychologist is going to tell you, I think you're confused. I have talked about the man who is 75 years old. He said it was child abuse what his grandmother did to him. When he was a child, she would dress him in women's dresses. It created a psychological problem for him. He eventually, when he was in his 40s, had what he euphemistically called bottom surgery. So he was mutilated by that. Many people who do that have life-changing complications that go for their entire life. But he said, and he was the first individual, he was not the first individual to have the legal, that guy did not have the surgery. This guy, who's 75 years old, said he lived that way for a number of years, and then went back and he said it was abuse psychologically and then eventually physical abuse because this is an industry. And yet the Canadian government is moving ahead with a ban on conversion therapy that would make it illegal to have a minor undergo conversion therapy. Now, it's not going to be illegal for them to undergo mutilation. It's not going to be illegal for them to be counseled by somebody who's trying to confuse them. It's going to be illegal to tell them, no, here is your biological gender, and this is what you are. It's just amazing to me to see the double standard. The same people who would recoil, rightfully so, in horror at the execution of somebody at 18 for something they did when they were 9, and yet they will support the mutilation of a child, just as we saw here in Texas, James Younger, the mother, who initially had the support of the judge, and they were going to chemically castrate him at the age of 8. I mean, not even the Saudis would do something like that. How barbaric is this? And of course, it's being done for our religion, our Hollywood religion, our Sodom and Gomorrah religion, as they are grooming these kids for pedophiles. That's exactly what this is about, because if you can make up your mind about this, about your gender, when you are 4 or 5 or 6 years old, then of course you can consent to sex. That's what it's all about. So in Canada, if passed, it will be illegal to cause a minor to undergo any conversion therapy. Don't counsel them about what their biological gender is. And you can't remove them to have any counseling. But I'm telling you that what this is really ultimately directed at is not at the psychologists or the psychiatry people. This is ultimately targeting Christians, the people who are allied with George Conway, Kellyanne Conway's husband, the Lincoln Project. The very first thing they did was they came after Christians. And the woman who was the co-leader of that, everybody's talking about George Conway, but the people who are involved in this are coming from the Log Cabin Republicans. This is the homosexual branch of the Republican Party. They are happy they won on marriage. They got the Supreme Court to redefine marriage. And the Log Cabin Republicans said, well, just leave it at that. Why pick a fight over this? You know, we like tax cuts and other things like that, so we want to vote Republican. But she was part of a group that wanted to ban not only psychological therapy, but she also wanted to punish, criminalize it if any Christian groups said that. And that's really the conversion that we're talking about coming after that. Meanwhile, in Georgia, you have a Georgia bill that would make child transgender surgeries and drugs to chemically castrate children illegal. That's the direction that we need to go. That's the direction of sanity. We'll be right back. Stay with us. This is where we're going to break. I talked about how a Georgia bill that has been introduced would make child transgender surgeries and life-altering drugs illegal. The legislation would ban healthcare professionals from performing transgender surgeries on a minor child. You know, things like mastectomies, castration, vaginoplasty, penectomy. These are things that I haven't even seen before. I mean, just wicked what they're doing to kids. Can you imagine somebody would do this to a child? Again, the guy who was 75 years old, he said it was psychological abuse and my grandmother dressed me as a girl. And eventually in his 40s, he was so confused that he had surgery. He said it was horrible. I've been abused psychologically, physically by this cult that is out there. The bill in Georgia would ban this for all these different things for the purpose of attempting to affirm the minor's perception of such minor's sex if that perception is inconsistent with such minor's sex. And as one individual who was working to put this through said, this form of child abuse is becoming a serious problem in Georgia. In Georgia. And it is evolving into a national crisis. She said, we're talking about children who've not yet reached the age of legal consent, yet they're being subjected to life-altering, irreversible surgeries and drug treatments that render them sterile and permanently disfigured. The psychological damage this does to innocent children must come to an end. This legislation makes such abusive actions criminal. The president and general counsel of the Child and Parental Rights Campaign, Bernadette Broyles, said the bill was partly modeled after one that came close to passing in South Dakota. And just understand, when they're talking about child and parental rights, this is not at all like the UN's Convention on the Rights of the Child. Understand, this perverted agenda to come after children, this is another UN agenda. Just like the UN 2030 agenda for sustainability, which is giving us smart cities. Just like the UN agenda for the war on drugs prohibition, they've got a lot of agendas. But they've got an agenda to eradicate parental rights, and these people are trying to reestablish it. So it's just the opposite of the UN trying to destroy parental rights so they can get to the kids and do this to them. In October 2018, Broyles was working then with the Georgia Adoption and Family Law Practice. They co-filed a complaint with the U.S. Department of Education that focused on the sexual assault of a kindergarten girl in a Decatur school district that allowed transgender students to use the bathrooms of their choice. In that case, still working its way through the bureaucracy, the education bureaucracy, Office for Civil Rights, the mother of a five-year-old girl alleged that her daughter was sexually assaulted by a, quote, gender fluid, unquote, boy in the girl's bathroom in November 2017. Broyles said, so we began to look more closely into what's going on in the schools and that it wasn't just the private facilities, that it was now in other aspects of the school where various school systems were allowing transgender activists into the schools, or they were allowing their teachers or their administrators to be trained by activists, such that they were bringing in either curriculum or just a mindset, listen to this, a mindset similar to evangelism. Evangelism. Transgender evangelism. That's what the schools have become. I thought we had a separation of church and state. Now, she said, I use that term very deliberately because this thing has become similar to a religious belief and a cult. It is not grounded in science. It's grounded in a very subjective, personal, metaphysical belief. Yeah, Mephistopheles is really what it's grounded in. It is a religious system. It is a cult. It is a cult that seeks to consume your children. If they can't kill them at birth with abortion, mutilate them, destroy them, they will destroy them physically. They'll destroy them spiritually and mentally. And that is what the schools are now actively doing. It is a process of evangelism. Understand that secular humanism is a belief system in opposition to Christianity, direct opposition to Christianity. Remember when I played the clips of Castro, we were talking about Bernie Sanders. 1959, he takes power with the assistance of the CIA. Then he immediately starts nationalizing big businesses and private property of Cubans, but it was the big businesses, the American businesses that were being nationalized that got the CIA after him. So they try to overthrow him with the Bay of Pigs. And we subsequently had, you know, he invites in the Russian missiles. We have the Cuban Missile Crisis. All that happened. 1959, he gets in, and he starts confiscating stuff right away. And then you have 61. You have the Bay of Pigs. And 62, you have the Cuban Missile Crisis. 63, Kennedy gets assassinated. In 65, he comes to the U.S. and he says, I'm not communist. I do not know what you mean. I am for democracy. I'm a democracy. I am a humanist, he said. A humanist, exactly. That is the philosophy, the religion that Marxism is built upon, secular humanism. It is a religion. Understand, your children are going to have a worldview, a religious view, a culture. The question is which one? And this really is evangelism that is happening there. She said, many parents are now seeing teachers or administrators proselytizing this transgender belief system into their children's schools. And that's exactly what is happening. But, you know, that case that happened there in Georgia is not alone. We've had now a school system in Wisconsin. A Wisconsin high school has now closed their gender-neutral bathrooms after an 18-year-old student, it's not a 5-year-old girl, molested by a gender-fluid boy. This is now an 18-year-old student arrested for fourth-degree sexual assault, child enticement, and exposing his genitals to a child inside the facility. So they shut it down. Now, that's in Wisconsin. However, you have the Wisconsin Teachers Union demanding that kids share the bathrooms with transgender educators. And you turn your kids over to this system? Seriously? When you look at what is happening in California, I mean, it's not just the indoctrination in the schools. And it truly is. Just look at California. Now you've got a bill that's now been proposed by a representative out of Silicon Valley, a Democrat, of course. mandating gender-neutral retail departments. They're going to fine stores that have 500 or more employees if they maintain undivided areas of their sales floor where, if it sells child care articles, children's clothing or toys, all child care items, all clothing for children, or all toys, regardless of whether the particular item has traditionally been marketed for either girls or for boys, shall be displayed. If you do that kind of thing, if you have a boys and girls department for toys, for clothes or anything, you're going to be fined $1,000. This is their priority. You would think that, in Silicon Valley and those areas, San Francisco and so forth, with the homeless situations that they've got, with the excrement all over the sidewalks, with the crime and so forth, you would think that they would have some other priorities, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you think that maybe they'd be building roads to help with traffic? No. We've got to go through and micromanage department stores to make sure that they are pushing the eradication of boys and girls. Can't have that anymore. Let me tell you something. That is their number one priority. That is what they're focused on. You look at this and say, wow, these guys are really majoring in the minors. No. They're majoring in the majors. If you don't realize that this is ground zero of what is happening to this country, this culture, then you really aren't paying any attention. This is how they are destroying the culture, the Sodom and Gomorrah method that they're using to come after the kids. This is really what is destroying this country. All right, we're just about out of time. Before we go, I just want to remind you, we still have available our storable food if you want to try to make sure that you're not going to get snapped up into a FEMA camp. If somebody runs a test on you, you've had it, or you've got a mild version of the coronavirus, you don't want to get put into a situation that's really going to act as an incubator for you, be subjected to toxic, untested drugs. You want to make sure that you can maintain your independence, make sure you can maintain your health, and we've got a lot of products for that as well. So we have storable food, and our supplier has upped their capacity here in the United States. It's all made in the U.S. It's non-GMO. You can preserve it for 25 years. You can reseal it after you've opened it for use for another couple of days. And you can still get it at InfoWarsStore.com. We've not raised our prices, and we've been able to get it down a little bit from its peak demand. Even though demand is still going up, we've had our supplier triple its production facility, so we're now down to 8 weeks, or a little bit under 8 weeks. We also have gravity feed water filters and many products to support your health. InfoWarsStore.com.